Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian, Insight 123, all about symbian.com for the main site, of course. This is the Companion Podcast. I'm Steve Litchfield, and with me I have, over in Sussex,
Rafe Blanford,
and up in Edinburgh,
Ewan Spence.
There we go, raring to go, I dare say. We have a new device to talk about, in fact, two new devices, if you want to be technical about it. First one, though, is, and probably the funkiest, is the X501. It's a twist to spin to select random tracks. It's essentially a Nokia E72 collapsed into a square form factor with a slide-out QWERTY keymat. I rather like the look of it. Ewan, as you're the funk meister and the music meister, did you want to go first on this one with your own opinions of the X5?
I think this X5 is going to do very well in the market that it's aimed for. It's aimed, it's only going to be launched in Indonesia. It's obviously aimed at the teen market who do social messaging, who will consume music. There's going to be an option of a comes with music variant for the networks to pick up here. I think this is going to be like the Sidekick. When the Sidekick first came up, Sidekick came out when he was even before them, when it was the Danger Hip Top, most of the tech elite looked down at them and went, ugh, kids' film. Rather like Monty Python did with the goodies. 1970s cult TV reference achieved. And everybody seems to have glatched onto the internet and went, oh, this isn't the iPhone killer. What's this? It's just weird. And also the fact that Nokia haven't really made clear, I think, that it's a slider device, that the keyboard tucks away underneath and you're left with just a screen and your soft key control, so you can view quite easily, you can consume quite easily, and to create, you pop up, do the keys, then pop it down again. It is a different form factor to what people are used to. It is a great exponent of what we were talking about in the last podcast, which is Nokia looking at a target market and go, what exactly does this market need? And delivering what that market needs. It doesn't matter that 95% of the rest of the world aren't ever going to see this phone, let alone consider buying it. The fact is, the people who are going to see this phone, who it is meant for, are probably going to buy it in a huge number. I mean, you could argue that this is very much like an old Series 40 device. In fact, I think it lifts the name as well. But it's funky, it's different, and, you know, lots of people online fear change, so they've put it down. But I think, you know, this is quite nice. And to be honest, I'd actually like to have a little look at this as well. Given the fun that we had with the E75 and the slidey QWERTY keyboard, we all of us to a man kind of went, not sure about that one. But over a couple of months, or like that, I think you'd find the same with the X5.
Yeah, just a few specifications before I let Rafe leap in there. It's 129 grams in weight. It's so heavy-ish, I guess. So I guess that means it's made of decent materials. 17 mil thick, so it is thickish. It says it's got a curved back, which maybe makes a difference, makes it fit into the hand better. Same 2.4-inch screen as on the things like the E63, E72. 200 megabytes of Intel memory, so plenty of CDIC space there. 128 meg of RAM, so same as the E72. A 5-megapixel camera with flash. I suspect it's probably extended depth of an EDOF camera, which will make sense for the target market. Dedicated music hardware key, which again speaks into the music market there, and I think will do well. And of course, a 3.5 mil audio jack. And as it's quick access.
You say, of course.
Quick access to Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, and Hi5, which again gives you absolutely crystal clear picture of who this is aimed at. Rafe, what is your take on the X501?
Well, like you and I was a bit surprised to see some of the criticism around this device. I mean, the big point for me is really the pricing of this. This is 165 euros before taxes and subsidies. And Nokia were very specific in saying that this was aimed at kind of some of the emerging markets and they would launch in India first. And it's probably worth reminding people that the Nokia C3 launched in Indonesia, I think it was a couple of weeks ago now, and there were queues of hundreds of people waiting to get their hands on this phone, you know, just like the iPhone queues you see in the States typically on iPhone launch day. Yet this was for a Nokia product with a QWERTY keyboard, particularly in that market, those are very popular, which is why we're seeing Nokia do some variations around this. This is obviously a bit of a step up in terms of both pricing but also functionality, because this is going to have a lot more of the obvious services on board. The particular emphasis in this case is around music and social messaging. So, you know, access to the Ovi Music Store, you know, complete music solution on the go. And the comes with music in Indonesia has been one of the markets where I think it's been more successful. It might be Singapore. I'll correct in the show notes if that's the case. And let's say the social messaging, which is the things around Nokia messaging for email and similarly for Facebook and Twitter in Nokia messaging for social networks. It's also instant messaging, so multi-headed for Google Talk. So it's a fairly comprehensive messaging, social messaging package aimed particularly at consumers. I have to sort of say, I don't find it the most attractive handset in the world, but it's very difficult telling from pictures, sort of renders rather than anything else. I've seen a few hands-on photos. It does seem to look better there. And some of the suggestions are that the build quality is pretty good. I do like the fact that it comes in a whole array of colours. They do seem to be rather more violent than the usual ranges of the lime green and the sort of fuchsia pinky purple. Maybe not would be my first choice for a phone, but I think, as Ewan suggested, that's very much aimed at the particular target market. So I think some of the criticism around this phone, you know, it was particularly picked up on some of the US tech blogs and compared unfavourably to the iPhone. Well, aside from missing out on the price point and everything else, I think this is just speaks to the point that a lot of people don't really have a very good awareness of Nokia as a global company, creating products across a very, very broad portfolio of range and functionality on a global market, so for many countries. And in many ways, I think this is a sign of where Nokia has been at its strongest in recent years in creating products for those emerging markets and the sort of democratization of the smartphone and getting its obvious services into these markets. And I think that could be, you know, very telling in the time to come, because if you hook them onto your product and service earlier, I think it will tell in the future. The interesting thing is, up until this point, it's really just been around brand and the sort of mobile phone side of things. You know, calling and texting are kind of universal. But as soon as you start tying people into some of your services or expectations on how things should work on be it messaging or access to social networks, that's an extra degree of tie-in. So, you know, Nokia perhaps are creating even more loyal users beyond just the brand and the sort of reputation for the calling and messaging, as in texting functions. So I think, yes, interesting product, even if, as you both said, it's perhaps not of interest to high-end sort of users who are looking for something a bit more. But I guess that will be about the N8, which we'll come on to later in this podcast.
But why write all of that when you can simply write Nokia launch Trio Killer and get a cheap laugh?
That's true.
There are some woefully misinformed people out there in the tech media world.
Some of them are on this podcast.
It's not woefully misinformed. They just have different opinions. They just happen to not agree with mine.
Yeah, well, that indeed defines them as woefully misinformed. moving on swiftly. Also launched at the Nokia Connection event in Singapore was a new variant of the X6, an 8GB model. I'm guessing this is probably for the Asian market and won't necessarily appear in the UK. Expected price is quoted in euros, though, in the press release at 225, which I guess is going to be around about just under £200. And it should begin shipping in quarter three. I guess there are no other changes, Rafe, other than the memory size. Is this indeed just aimed for Asia?
Yes, Steve, I think you're right there. It probably will be available in all markets. It will just depend on whether the operators want to take it up. I mean, effectively, it's just a slightly cheaper version of the X6 16GB and indeed the 32GB version, probably just making it accessible to a few more people, being able to push that price point a little more down. I think Nokia's sort of X series perhaps haven't had the momentum that they wanted, and so by doing this, it's a very cheap way of sort of creating a little bit of extra price stretch on the product. But yes, as you say, there are no other differences apart from the memory capacity.
I think a lot of this is to make sure that Nokia has a portfolio for the networks rather than the consumers. It gives a music-based device with a capacitive screen at 32 gigabyte, 16 gigabyte, and 8 gigabyte, which means that the networks, you know, who need to have a music touch-based device at a certain price point, Nokia now have three chances at different price zones to land that in there. And even though we're only talking the price difference of maybe about, you know, to the networks of maybe about 25-30 euros at wholesale cost, that's enough to make sure that it can fit into a portfolio. I suspect that there's been a network or two that said, can we have this slightly cheaper? And Nokia said, well, will it work with 8 gig for you? Yes, right, we'll release that then, and it will be slotted. So I suspect there will be some networks that this is absolutely perfect for, which is why it's there.
I think 8 gigabytes is something of a sweet spot for the majority of consumers. Those who want more can obviously get one of the other variants of the X6. But, you know, 8 gigabytes, we're talking several thousand music tracks plus applications plus videos and still having a bit of room left over. So probably, you know, sufficient for most people.
Yeah, I could point out rather cruelly that they should make the 32 gigabyte the cheap model in the range, because it works at about half the speed. And it's by far the lowest device in the range in terms of performance and everything you can do on it. The X616 gigabyte was the one I tried, and I was really quite impressed by its speedy performance. So I would, Nokia, class the 16 gig version as the flagship in the X6 range. But it is good to see the 8 gigabyte version. I think that will do very well, because that will be just as speedy and obviously 30 to 40 euros cheaper.
It's exactly like chess. The king is the leader, but he's slow, doesn't get on very well, but can traverse the board if you take some time. The queen's the fast mover, but you can quite easily sacrifice the 16 gigabyte memory she has for that speed.
Yeah, so it's a bit like Nokia as a whole, I'm guessing someone's going to say next.
Indeed, yes. So you can decide who the pawn is.
the poor, humble about Symbian readers. Moving on swiftly, Ewan's got to dash at some point, so we're going to get his story in nice and early on. The IM and voice over IP client Nimbus, which I know you're very enamored by, has been updated to version 2.4 with closer ties to your smartphone's address book, kinetic scrolling throughout the interface. I know this was rather clunky on previous versions, and finer controls to control Twitter. So, Ewan, how does Nimbus now measure up to things like Fring and its competition?
It measures up very well, and it's done things that I always like to see in an application, which is to make it feel like the built-in one, to use the UI elements that people are already expecting to use on the phone, to make it feel like the contacts application, to make it feel like the messaging application and such like. So the addition of things like the kinetic scrolling throughout the interface and wherever it is appropriate basically makes this feel like it fits in. Previously, before Nimbus, had been a sort of, you kind of had to compromise your thinking to get all the benefits of the application. Here, there's less of a mental compromise you have to make when jumping into the application. And it works. This is a simple thing. When you have things like Facebook, when you have things like Skype, when you have Google Talk, you have your favorite voice over IP application that you're using. You know, people who don't think they have a lot of networks out there will find that they probably have at least 4 or 5 different IM networks that they interact with during a week. And when you're out and about, the point of the phone is to have everything quick and easy to access. And Nimbus brings all of that in into a one consistent interface in one place with one login to the Nimbus server. And it goes away and does everything else for you. There's none of the setup that I remember that we used to have to play around with to get Jabber clients working. When we did, oh, look, we can get Google Talk running on it after about 27 minutes of setting up and fiddling with logins and software hacks and such like. It just works. It's not a perfect solution simply because it has to have some compromise to make sure that all the IM clients work. So any sort of specific features from one platform might not be featured. It's also interesting that they've had to give Twitter its own screen because the paradigm is so different to things like AOL, ICQ and Yahoo Instant Messenger. But on the whole, it's a free application for download and to use. The only cost is if you want to use Nimbus's VoIP phone out system, so you can call regular phone numbers. If you've already got money in Skype, you can switch and get it to use your Skype out credits as well. It does what it says in the tin. It does it well enough that I'm happy for it to stay on the phone, and it certainly deserves a look from everybody else.
My favourite feature of Nimbus, as you pointed out in your review and all about Symbian end of last week, is the fact that you can just install Nimbus on a new device, upgraded device, or at all just a secondary device, put in your Nimbus username and password, and all the other systems will just come up automatically. There's no re-entering your Skype and Facebook and whatever other passwords as well. It's just a very, very quick and easy setup. And I also love the fact that it doesn't try and hang around in memory all the time and take over the phone like certain other programs do. You start Nimbus and it's running and it does what you want. You leave it in the background, it notifies you. When you've finished with it, you close the program and it goes away. It doesn't hang around using up 10 megabytes of RAM and interfering right, left and center. So kudos to Nimbus for that. And I gather there's also a cute little viral function they've added, Ewan.
Indeed, yes. Because it's integrated into your address book, you can send a free text to all your friends going, why don't you use Nimbus as well? Obviously without the Nanette Newman-inspired voice. But again, it's a nice touch if you've got like relatives that use their phones but aren't quite up to getting down the application. You just bang this text in, it gives them a link. Next thing they know, they have it set up on their phone as well.
Moving on to more generic news, we'll come to the N8 shortly, but Symbian 3 has been announced as functionally complete this week, Rafe. Now, I'm guessing by that, I mean, they basically finished coding everything, and all that remains now are bug fixes. I guess that's right, but how long do you think it'll now be before manufacturers will take this functionally complete code and have it working in an actual firmware, an actual device? What's the timescales involved?
First of all, I should define functionally complete. It's actually that the Symbian Foundation Release Council, and that's the sort of body that is responsible for deciding when Symbian platform releases happen, sort of signing off on them, if you like, believe it's ready for use by the community. It does not mean that it is feature complete. That will come later in August, at which point then it will just be about bug fixes. So in theory, there could be small functional additions between now and then. However, the majority of the work, as you suggested, is now concentrating on what's called the hardening process, and that is fixing bugs, making sure everything's secure, making sure it's ready for consumer devices. So that is basically ready to go. The Symbian Foundation is now saying it's ready for device manufacturers to start building devices with. So this means that anyone can come along, use the code and start building devices on it. You know, these are just recommendations. Obviously, Nokia has been using the code for some time to build a device like the N8. And there is a sort of slight lag time between when Symbian does a formal release. And I think the formal release of Symbian 3 in terms of the final release will probably take place in October. That does not mean that the N8 will not be released till October. We're probably still looking at end of August, beginning of September release for the N8. But that's to do with the way sort of these releases happen in terms of governance. You know, they are sort of dotting the I's, crossing the T's. I would suggest it might mean that the N8 will, you know, benefit from having a few platform bug fixes. But by the time, you know, that rolls around, it's largely complete now. But clearly something like that is an ongoing prospect. So to answer your question in terms of when it will be in devices, the N8 is the first one that's been announced. We haven't heard any more yet, although there are multiple devices on the way from multiple manufacturers. And I suspect we'll see an increasing stream of those from, as I say, September onwards. If I had to put some money on it, I'd say I'd start expecting them to appearing in sort of more numbers in maybe end of October, November, in time for the Christmas market. But to sort of, in terms of the importance, this is very important for the Symbian Foundation, because this is you know, the first time they've achieved this with a fully open source platform. You know, Symbian 1 and Symbian 2 were partly closed in that the source code was not fully available under the EPL license. So it sort of marks an important milestone and achievement for the Symbian Foundation. And it's pretty much dead on schedule. I mean, they said that this point would happen around June 2010, and indeed it has. And that does mean that devices, as they said, in the second half of 2010. So the idea that there's a big delay to Symbian 3 is a bit inaccurate, I think. It was a case of slight confusion around the messaging and the actual timescales involved. I think it's probably fair to say they had hoped to get this out just a little bit earlier and to get the hardening process underway that little bit quicker. But there was also always going to be a certain amount of uncertainty around that. But when you consider that Symbian 1 sort of had its completion, if you like, at the beginning of the year, and Symbian 2 has basically just recently finished its hardening process. They're on the sort of the 6-month release cycle, whereby you sort of get one version of the platform is sort of becomes complete, yeah. And then at the same time, the previous version is hardened, as in complete. And so these technical terminology don't really mean very much to the consumer, but you know, it does mean that Symbian 3 is very much on track for devices in the second half this year.
I guess what this will mean, of course, for users is that the N8 will, shock horror, get a firmware update after 2 or 3 months. But I don't think that should come as a surprise to anyone.
No, I'm sure with a device like the N8, which is, you know, one of Nokia's key devices, although Nokia won't say so at this point, of course, for obvious reasons, I would expect there to be several product updates which will, you know, both be bug fixes in terms of the platform, but also add in additional functionality and features. A good example we might look at is the browser, which when we talk about it on the N8, probably worth saying that there's not a big difference in the browser functionality. However, that is being worked on. and they're sort of expecting a beta of that around October time of final release towards the end of the year. So I wouldn't be at all surprised to see an update for the N8, you know, in January, February, sometime next year, that include an update to the browser, for example. And that sort of thing is going to become a lot more common, as indeed has already happened with the sort of existing Symbian One devices, with, I think, Ovi Maps perhaps being one of the best examples of something that gets upgraded in the firmware. That kind of pattern is going to continue to grow in future Symbian devices.
And it's also fair to point out that even though lots of people are complaining about the N8 being delayed by a matter of a couple of weeks, lots of manufacturers, lots of industry watchers will see a statement like this, and it will give them confidence, because over the last year, Nokia, the Symbian Foundation, have continued to put out statements of this is where the code is, this is where we're doing. They're doing something that very few open source projects actually do, which is setting goals, projects, and timescales, sticking to them, showing everybody that they're sticking to them. It's one of the reasons why Ubuntu is actually so successful. They say, we're going to have releases at these dates and these dates. There will be alphas, betas, and golds at these dates, these dates, these dates, and they make these dates every 6 months. Symbian Foundation is doing exactly the same, and that sort of thing gives confidence to manufacturers. It gives confidence to networks. Okay, so most commentators who just, you know, get up and do it in their bedroom don't quite see how important statements like this are, but they are.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, I would say that Symbian 3 has perhaps been a bit delayed, and, you know, the N8, I think it's fair to say that Nokia originally envisaged getting it out at the beginning of Q3 rather than sort of midway through. So, I mean, I think the delay is probably around 6 weeks rather than anything dramatic, as has been suggested elsewhere. But you're absolutely right about that kind of confidence. And that's sort of reflected in Symbian's advantage as a whole, in that it's sort of the mature platform that's been around. I'm sure there'll be a lot of manufacturers looking at Symbian 3 to seeing whether that sort of track record can be maintained. And so something like the N8 and any of the early Symbian 3 devices are going to be important to the Symbian Foundation, certainly in that regard.
And of course, it should be noted that the Nokia's Symbian devices are actually particularly good at handling updates. I was doing the comparison on the site last week between the Nokia N8 and other Symbian flagships, and also the HTC Desire and upcoming Apple iPhone 4. And really, I have to say that the Nokia Symbian devices still do lead the pack in terms of update flexibility. You get the option to update over the air, preserving all your data very quickly and seamlessly, and as an alternative, through a PC, if something goes horribly wrong over the air, you can replace the firmware completely on a PC. And yet again, that will keep all your user data, and you get the option to back up as well. And it's all handled rather well and in a rather bomb-proof fashion in comparison to, for example, many of the Android devices that aren't with the Google experience. You end up having to wipe the entire device in order to update the firmware. I believe it's some of the only with Google devices where they actually do a Nokia-style over-the-air update with everything in place. So I have no compunction whatsoever in recommending that the N8 as a device which will evolve like the N90, much ill-fated N97, only that this will start hopefully for a much more much higher performance starting point, but will continue to evolve as the N97 did, with new features, new browser and whatnot coming on stream.
And that's the point to make about these N8 and these delays, however, you know, long they are. Nokia making the commitment, and they've said many times now in various statements that they're not going to release the N8 till it's ready. I think people's definition of ready is going to vary enormously, and no doubt there'll be a bit of commentary around that when it does get released. But it was quite clear to me that they intend not to have a repeat of the N97 situation in terms of, you know, the quality of the product. And certainly the signs from having had some hands-on this week that certainly seems to be true. We have to wait until it actually is released to get the final proof of that. But and I think it's the right thing for Nokia to do, not only to sort of restore their reputation after the N97, but just as a general point of, you know, view. And given that they've decided to do that and have taken a very, very significant financial hit as a result in their share price and the reaction to that, even if that reaction is, I think, perhaps slightly misinformed, Nokia probably knew that that was going to be the kind of impact there would be with saying there is a delay to Symbian 3. You know, they could have attempted to fudge it and say, actually, it's not really a delay, there's this technical reason. But they're probably, you know, right to say, yes, there is a delay in the N8 compared to our internal plans.
Yeah, it should be mentioned that the reason the N97 went wrong wasn't actually because of the fact that it was buggy, although, of course, most of these very cutting-edge phones tend to be buggy, and then Nokia fixed up over time. We can forgive that. The problem with the N97, and quite rightly, is that Nokia's hardware and software specifications got out of whack, so that the device physically didn't have enough RAM and didn't have enough flash memory to do the tasks for which it was going to have to do over the next six months to a year. Now, the N8 starts with a much higher threshold, if you like. It's got 256 megabytes of RAM, so we're looking at 150 to 160 free on startup. We're looking at 130 megabytes, I believe, free on disk C, which is something like 2.5 times that of the N97.
That's right. And I think with the N97 in particular, you know, the idea that it would stretch perhaps beyond what the software and hardware platform does is very true. And of course, that then made it far more difficult to fix, and that's why some of the updates took so long. I suspect, you know, if there are bug fixes to come, they will happen a lot quicker. But as I say, you know, the final proof will have to wait.
Yeah. So at the start of this week, Rafe and I were actually playing with N8s. We had a whole bunch of them, one in every colour under the sun, and a number of back plates and other partially assembled bits and pieces, along with a number of other media representatives. We were given a half an hour demonstration of things like the surround sound, the HDMI video out, the home screen setup, and so on. We were able to ask any questions we want, and there's quite a bit of that up on the site in terms of commentary. Rafe's put a video up on the site, just over 7 minutes long, giving you a complete walkthrough of the main functions on an N8. He did it all live, so I know he didn't quite cover everything, Rafe, but there's certainly demonstration of the multitasking, where you get the static thumbnail showing every application that's running, demonstration of the Photos application. There's the multi-touch in Gallery, of course, the new version of the Ovi Maps application, music player with the full Apple-like cover flow album art. There's a slightly different camera interface, and we've also got multi-touch, I believe, in the camera, Rafe. Is that right? You can pinch and zoom?
I believe it's not pinch to zoom, it's a switch between the aspect ratios in sort of video and camera capture mode.
Okay, well, this will all be hopefully tested in great depth over the next couple of months as we start getting hardware in. He also demonstrated the multi-page home screen and the amount of customization you can do, and it all runs a lot slicker, a lot faster than on the N97, again, helped by that larger RAM quotient. And he also demonstrated Nokia messaging and the full HTML email and web TV. Now, what's this web TV, Rafe? I'm confused. Web TV?
So web TV is basically Nokia is creating an application which I suspect is best described as an evolution of Video Center that we've seen on earlier devices, whereby content publishers can use, and it's going to be an open framework, to sort of deliver streaming video onto the phone. And so on the ones we saw, it had CNN, National Geographic, iPlayer, and a couple of other service providers. But I understand this is going to be quite open, so theoretically it would be possible for, you know, a blogger to create their own channel, which could then be installed via Ovi Store or indeed any other sort of broadcast service.
Isn't this just like a rename of the old Video Center application?
It is in one sense, but they've updated the way it works. And so, for example, BBC iPlayer will be integrated into this rather than a standalone application. And it's significantly more sophisticated than Video Center, which was basically based on RSS feeds. This enables sort of significantly more complex sort of mini applications to run within it. They can be based on Flashlight. They can be based on web runtime. And it kind of acts as a container for a variety of these services. I think the point that Nokia are trying to do is making it very easy for people to get at streaming video on their handset, which for something like the N8, which then has this HDMI out for putting it onto a big screen, and quite a big screen for watching it on the device itself, it makes it much easier, much more likely that consumers will consume this video content rather than having to go and hunt it down themselves. And I think it's sort of there'll be a bigger push to get, you know, national broadcasters, etc., to offer this. Because, of course, in comparison to when Video Center came out a few years ago, the kind of on-demand services over the web are now a lot more common. And I was told it will take typically a publisher 2 days to integrate the sort of web TV using their existing back end. And they just, you know, provide the necessary sort of connection bits, if you like. It's very easy to do, So it's actually significantly advanced on from the idea of Video Center. I think it's sort of more based around streaming content, although it will also support the download of content where the sort of digital rights are available, and as is the case on the UK's BBC iPlayer. It's actually, I think this might end up being quite a secret weapon of the N8, simply because this kind of thing is becoming increasingly popular, but there is kind of a barrier to adoption, is it's not always been very easy to do. You know, YouTube works well where there's a YouTube client, but it, you know, often the things people are most interested in is sort of catch-up TV services, you know, while you're sitting in bed and sitting around the home, or maybe travelling away somewhere. And web TV should enable this across a very broad range of services, you know, rather than just being dedicated to YouTube. You know, any service provider, you know, be it a broadcaster or be it a video service online somewhere, can provide their own channel within this that's, you know, much easier to use than maybe having to go to a website or something like that.
So roll on the phone show on web TV.
Absolutely.
It should be noticed, the N8 video output, it does use HDMI, a can output at full 720p, and we did see a demonstration, as I say, with the full surround sound actually running through a Dolby, I think it was Dolby test video, showing each of the speakers in turn, including the ambient speaker, and terrific quality. But it should be noted that HD video, I think, is something like 100 megabytes a minute. So we're looking at 10 gigabytes for the even a shortish film. So although people say, oh yes, you can carry around a bunch of high def video movies on your N8 and just plug it into a TV anywhere you are, in reality, with only 16 gigabyte inside, that's only 16 gigabyte, look, hear how I sound, in 2010, plus say a 32 gigabyte micro SD card, you're still going to have to think quite carefully about what HD content you put on.
But that is, of course, at the highest quality. I mean, you will get it spun down when you start stripping away things like the Dolby sound, because that's particularly aggressive in terms of the amount it takes. So if you think of a typical DVD, you know, we're talking a couple of gigabytes there in a lot of cases, and that sort of thing, at that kind of performance, you will get. But yes, you know, video can very much vary in terms of bit rates and things like that. I think thinking about the actual video that the N8 itself records,
10 megabits per second.
Yes, that's right. So it works out at something like 50 megabytes or 100 megabytes for a minute of video. Is that right?
Yes, so which actually is quite reasonable for stuff you take yourself, because you're not going to take hours and hours of footage on your phone without doing archiving it immediately, are you? You're going to take five minutes here and 10 minutes there.
And I suspect a lot of people will, you know, if they're doing a long bit of video, may say, right, I'm going to record this at VGA rather than this 720p resolution. But what did impress me was, I mean, the sound quality on that was unlike anything I've heard from a phone before. You know, I've heard the Dolby demos before, but actually knowing that that was coming out of a phone that's going to be available commercially was incredibly impressive. And we also got some demo of the video that the N8 had shot, and the sort of the ambient surround sound coming from the dual microphones really came across very well. And I think this kind of capability of both shooting video and then playing back either on the device or more critically on HDTVs, so kind of being almost a home entertainment system, is a rather underrated thing at the moment, because you really have to see it to believe it, or rather hear it to believe it, I should say. And we can talk about it on this podcast, but I think you just have to take our word for it that it was incredibly impressive as a demo.
Well, in fact, you can actually get a sense of how good the digital microphones are going to be on the N8 by actually listening to one of the episodes of my phone show, because I record that on the N86, which has the same digital microphone. Okay, it doesn't have two of them, but the idea is the same. And I believe the Apple iPhone 3GS and the other iPhones also use digital microphones, and that's where the difference lies between the old clunky microphones of yore and the new generation. And they're just so incredibly clean, and they adapt to high and low volumes and pick up such an incredible, it's like going from tape to CD, if you like, in the old audio world. And there's a world of difference, and that's the main reason I stick to the N86 as my principal video capture device, and why I'm tremendously looking forward to the N8. Having the extra sensor on the back, and both of the microphones tuned and optimized for different purposes. So the one on the camera side of the N8 is optimized for picking up the subject in front of it, and the one on the back is optimized for capturing ambient sound and handling things like noise cancellation. So Nokia really put a lot of effort into this, and there is also an interview with Damon Dinning, who's been in charge of some of the camera work in terms of audio and video and audio capture up on All About Symbian. There's a 7-minute interview I did with him. So do go and watch that. And that gives you, again, an idea of how enthusiastic he is about it and how enthusiastic I was to get my hands on it, to play with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, I mean, we could keep on and on about the M8 in this podcast, but I think a lot of people who are listening to this will be familiar with a lot of the basic feature sets. So I think probably what's of interest is, you know, what we thought in terms of performance and stability. So I'll get you to go first. Yeah. I mean, what was your overriding impression with playing with the M8? And for those who want to find out more about what's on it and what it's like, there's a lot of content on the site, so go and check that out. But we'll try and give us a broad overview impression now.
Yeah, I was quite impressed. My initial worry is that I thought I've had a 3.7-inch screen on the Samsung A910 and on the Google Nexus 1, Motorola Mars, and I've played with these larger screen phones, and I thought, well, I'm going to find it a bit too small and looky and unimpressive. But in actual fact, Damien was right when we interviewed him. He said, look, we've designed it with a 3.5 OLED screen to give an emphasis, first of all, on feeling right in the hand, on what an optimization for one-handed usage. They're very much the opinion you shouldn't go around holding their top-end smartphone in one hand, prodding at it with the other hand. They're very much the feel that you should be able to use it as you use a traditional phone one-handed. So like with the Nokia 5800 with its 3.2-inch screen, they said, okay, we'll limit it to 3.5 inches. That way you can still reach across it with your thumb. You can use it one-handed if you need to. They went through with OLED, which is my other worry, that they wouldn't be able to see it outside in sunlight because of the extra entertainment possibilities and the screen looking vibrant and brilliant and so on. And they did say that this was a second generation OLED screen. Now, obviously, we couldn't test it in the event because it was all indoors. But I'm looking forward to trying that out in full sunlight and seeing how it compares to the Super AMOLED screens. The build quality was excellent. It's the aluminium tube, effectively, with tempered glass on the front. There's a bit of plastic top and bottom. One hopes that's going to be enough for the different radio antennas. But I was generally not blown away, but I was generally filled with a sense of optimism. This is a product that's been well thought out, well optimized, and generally well conceived. So, big thumbs up from me.
Yeah, and in terms of my view, I'd agree with everything that Steve's just been saying there. Actually, you know, the feel of the device in hand is, I think, rather different from a lot of the Nokias that has gone before it because of that kind of usage of aluminium materials and that unibody style. And it does feel incredibly nice in the hand. Feels, you know, a lot smaller than something like the 5800, you know, which had that slightly chunkier plastic feel about it. And so it does compare very well with things like the iPhone and maybe the HTC Desire, with the added benefit that I think the size does make it more approachable as a one-handed device.
Yeah.
So I have no doubts whatsoever on the hardware front, and certainly, you know, the camera and things like that were incredibly impressive. And things like USB on the go are nice touches. There's the HDMI out. The camera capture button, for example, that was really well nicely done. That sort of two-stage action was really clear without being that stiffness that's on the N86 or too loose. So, you know, yeah. Big positive point there, and certainly I think for, you know, any casual user, happily replace their standalone digital camera with this for 99% of the things they use it for. Didn't get to touch Xenon Flash out, but I'm pretty confident the performance is going to be good there. I think this will be arguably the best camera phone on the market when it comes out, for a variety of reasons. In terms of the actual software, which is one thing what I was most interested in testing, I was actually pleasantly surprised by the sort of the stability of Symbian 3 as a platform. I didn't have any crashes that completely wiped out the device. And obviously, it's hard to tell when you're only testing it for a short period. The instabilities that did exist are not unsurprising in the kind of some of the add-on software that is still being integrated into the device and should improve over the next few weeks. But in terms of the core applications, everything felt very fluid. It felt solid performance. The one sort of caveat I'd add here is I actually tried out a couple of different devices, and there was one of them that did seem to be a bit more unstable than others. That's often the case when you're trying out these early production devices. They may be running something slightly different on them, or there's, you know, something crashed on them, or the extra debugging threads or whatever. But certainly the device I tried was more stable than the N97 I tried at the equivalent sort of time, which is, to my mind, pretty surprising for something that's the first on a new hardware platform and the first on a new software platform. Do I think there's still work to do? Yes, absolutely. If you look in the video, you'll notice there's a few pauses on screen rotation in photos, although elsewhere in the UI actually it was very very smooth and very quick on rotation. And also on starting the odd application, I think probably the most notable one in the video is on Nokia messaging. But again, that's something that hasn't been, you know, fully integrated yet. And that's a process that can shave significant kind of performance improvements, you know, in the last few weeks. And so although, you know, you can never give a definitive answer at this stage, and, you know, you actually need to use it for a few weeks so that in the real world usage conditions, I think the N8 is very promising indeed. And certainly all the evidence I've seen points towards it being a device that is going to go a long way to sort of bringing Nokia into attention at the high end. I think what I would say is I'm not sure it'll necessarily persuade people on the iPhone to switch back to Symbian, but I do think it will satisfy a lot of Nokia loyalists. And I think there's a lot of people who might be looking at high-end device and going, well, which one do I want? And will choose the Nokia because it's sort of the best in class for things like imaging, and it has the Nokia reputation for build quality. And I mean that in a good way, despite what people might think, and things like, you know, the RF reception. You know, if you're invested into the iPhone economy and the iTunes ecosystem, perhaps not. But I think, you know, people who are maybe on Android or who are looking to go into smartphones or have got existing Nokia smartphones, they'll be very excited by this product. And for everyone talking about this being, you know, a competitor to the iPhone, I would just add in the caveat and the reminder that this is just one product for Nokia. You know, Nokia is never about just one product. This is going to be part of a range of products at the high end that Nokia will be looking to compete with its, you know, high-end competitor making a comeback. You know, we've mentioned the Mego devices. There will be other Symbian 3 devices as well. And so I wouldn't get too hung up on doing a direct device-to-device comparison. We've done that on the site, and actually the N8 comes out pretty well indeed. But the big advantage I think Nokia has over many of its competitors is that it will offer a certain amount of device choice, even at the high end. And so, you know, personally, I'm not the biggest fan of, you know, the slate-like form factor. I like having a QWERTY keyboard. I like the hybrid devices. And so I'm pretty sure we'll see one of those running Symbian 3 before too long. And there will be, you know, options at a lower price for Symbian 3 in particular, and as I say, a higher price for something like the Mego devices. And so the N8 doesn't need to be the one device to compete with the iPhone. It needs to be part of a family of devices. But, you know, in terms of the important things like, you know, build quality and software stability, it's got everything pointing in the right direction. So I certainly came away feeling much more positive about what it's going to be like, you know, in the second half of the year, particularly moving towards Q4. And especially in the light of the sort of announcement that came later in the week about Nokia's giving effectively a profit warning, saying the, you know, margins on its devices and services division and its revenue is going to be at the lower end or slightly below the ranges predicted earlier. It's interesting, Nokia makes a statement like this, it loses 10% of its share price, and obviously it's not a good thing, but it's worth perhaps realising that, you know, it's still performing much better than its competitors like Sony Ericsson and LG, who have razor-thin, you know, margins. Nokia is still talking about a margin of 9 to 10%. And they sort of said that this is going to affect Q2 and Q3, which I think anyone could have seen. You know, there has been a gap in the N-series portfolio. There hasn't really been a big announcement since the N97. Yes, we had the N97 Mini, and even going further back than that, you know, the N97 wasn't a raging success. In previous years, we've had many more N-series devices, which is why I think Nokia has struggled in the high end this year. Just hasn't had the device portfolio, a lot of which is about the move to Symbian 3 and Mego. It's done comparatively well in its E-series devices. X-series, Nokia indicated they've had trouble ramping that up. And of course, they've had a lot of success in the, sort of the mid-tier and the low-end smartphones. So it's interesting to see the reaction around this is sort of Nokia doom and gloom. It's dying slowly. But actually, I think this Q2 and Q3 performance, probably it was quite expected it wasn't going to be great. I suspect this profit warning has rather come about because Android has come up rather quicker than anyone has expected, and indeed RIM and Apple are finding exactly the same thing. So, you know, the N8 provided a nice, this N8 hands-on day provided a nice counterpoint because it sort of pointed the way towards the future. And I suspect there'll be more announcements in the coming weeks that sort of reinforce what I've been saying for quite a while now, that Nokia's started to make the strategic changes that are needed to answer many of its criticisms in the high end while maintaining very good performance at the low end. If we look at the move to Symbian 3, MeeGo, Qt, a lot of the pieces are in place to give a significantly stronger performance in Q4 and going forward into 2011. And the share price, that's, you know, short-term stock market, very typical. And yes, we're sort of providing an optimistic viewpoint here. You can equally well say, you know, Nokia going to have trouble executing on all of this. But I would just suggest that I still feel that Nokia share prices are relatively undervalued. So, you know, that's, sorry, we moved on from the N8 hands-on into the Nokia device and servicing, which we did want to talk about in this podcast. But I will now shut up so Steve can get a word in edgeways.
I just wanted to point out, talking about prices and numbers there, I did try and press Nokia for a price on the N8, but they wouldn't be drawn at this stage. It is expected to come in at something like £400 unlocked, but more relevantly, as Rafe pointed out several times, is that people will probably pick up this up on contract in the high street. The clever money has it being free on or at nominal cost on £25 a month contracts, probably for 18 months or 2 years, which compares extremely well with things like the iPhone. I was looking at the iPhone 4 tariffs, which were announced this week by most of the UK operators. And for example, if you want an iPhone 4 on £25 a month, you, apart from having the same contract period, you've also got to fork out a one-off payment of £300 up front as well. So on that context, people say, well, I'll have the N8 and not pay the £300. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
But more to the point, the people who want an iPhone 4 tend to go for a higher monthly rate, probably £35 or £40 a month, and where, again, the N8 will be seen to be in a totally different category at £25.
Yeah, no, I think £25 might be might be optimistic for the launch period, but I would expect it to get there fairly rapidly. I mean, that's what the N97 Mini in the UK is sitting at at the moment, and that's actually sort of slightly more expensive device in terms of the launch cost. But yes, there is going to be a very noticeable price difference, even in the UK, where normally we get the biggest subsidies. And I think that will be more pronounced elsewhere. So you say you were talking about the £500 price point for the iPhone 4, and I think it's £600 for the 32-gigabyte version. I think the bigger competitor might be the iPhone 3GS, which is going to have a slight price reduction and will get a lot nearer to the N8, but of course that is a device that's a year old with all the sort of baggage that goes with that. So I think the N8 will certainly have a definite price advantage. And of course the other thing is, yes, it will start off at around the £400 mark. I mean, there's pre-order price around £450, which as usual sort of rip you off a bit. But I think the retail price around launch will be £400 or thereabouts, especially if you shop about. But I would expect that to fall quite rapidly. And, you know, typically we look at, you know, 6 to 8 months on, the price drops by about 25%, so could get around the £300 price point. And that's significant because it will still be competing against devices that I suspect will be priced higher than that. You know, it will get to the point where comparing, say, the highest end iPhone 4, you know, the 32 gigabyte version versus a SIM 3 N8 will probably be half the price. You know, by the time we're looking at springtime next year, you can exaggerate that, of course, but the point that Steve quite rightly makes is price will be a critical factor here. And, you know, people's access to, you know, being able to pay a big lump sum up front does vary. And it just means that something like the N8 is far more accessible to more people because of this price point, and it should not be underestimated. I know there are a lot of people who say, I can get it, whatever, but that does not apply to everybody.
But I think that's just about all we've got time for this week. So all remains to be saying is to keep in touch with us on Twitter at Steve Litchfield, at Ewan, and at Rafe Blanford. It's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me. See you all next week.
Right, bye.